Baseball is back.
Perdomo makes the play.
And a high fly ball. No doubt about this. Home run Marte.
They're going to send them all the way around. Corbin Carroll with an inside the park answer back.
I'm Ivan Melendez.
I'm Luis Gonzalez.
I'm Tori Lovello, and you're listening to the T-Backs Podcast.
T-Backs Podcast.
T-Backs Podcast.
Arizona's number one baseball and beverage podcast.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the T-Backs Podcast, Arizona's number one baseball and beverage podcast. Today, I am sipping a very hot cup of ginger tea blend as we're below freezing here in the UK. So we've got a few hints of snow falling outside the window. There's frost on the ground, and it's just generally very bloody chilly. But back across the pond in Arizona's warmer climate, we are seeing a lot of action as the D-backs office gets super busy. First off, the kind of breaking news on the front this week is the arrival of Gray Kessinger. He's a utility infielder we have acquired from the Astros in exchange for right-handed pitching prospect Matthew Lincke, which is an interesting thing because initially Kessinger over at the Astros was DFA'd as part of the corresponding roster moves that saw Christian Walker arriving at the Astros, of course, from the Diamondbacks. So that's a useful prospect, potentially utility man who we'll see get some action maybe in the infield, probably coming in off of the bench in most scenarios. And he's somebody who's, of course, the grandson of the legendary Chicago Cub, Don Kissinger. So potentially we're hoping he could bring a little bit of that old school way of playing the infield. Of course, Don Kessinger is somebody who Chicago Cubs fans of baseball have probably heard of for being, you know, a really quite elite shortstop within a unique style of playing the game, which is very interesting to see. He'll be a guy who we'll probably see on the opening day roster for the most part, unless, you know, something drastic happens. He's somebody who has, I believe, two options left, two AAA remaining on their contract, so while I think they're probably more likely to earn themselves a spot on the opening day roster than our other utility guys, people like we've got lots of different guys in AAA or in Reno and prospects coming through. You've got, of course, people like Tommy Troy, who are, you know, well known for being those kind of utility infield guys. And then, of course, most notably, the ultimate infield player in all of AAA / the Major League system right now in Tim Tower, who as of yet we haven't seen much of in a Diamondbacks jersey, but is well regarded over in AAA Reno, so it'll be interesting to see if he is somebody who can compete for that spot. I think there's only going to be one or two guys who are like your random backstops filling in as a utility player on the Diamondbacks roster this year, so maybe that'll be Tim Tower, maybe it'll be Gray Kissinger, we'll just have to see. But that is not the news that we are focusing on today on the show. The bigger news is that the D-backs have avoided arbitration and agreed deals with 9 key players. Now, if you're neck deep in Diamondbacks news and the general MLB news cycle, you probably know what this means and how it works. But that's not everybody. Not everybody who, you know, listens to the show is, you know, a baseball diehard. Some people are just, you know, casual fans of the D-backs and kind of want to know what's going on. Some people over here in the UK are just getting into baseball as part of the sport's fantastic continued growth here. So I got to say, I was one of these people. I was like, yeah, I kind of know what arbitration is. I kind of know how it works, but I didn't know too many of the specifics. So I think I needed a refresher. I gave my good friend Tom over in Arizona a call. And 2 hours later, after a very long call from which they were phoning in to my mixer from an Arby's in Gilbert, I got to say, I may not have the meats like Arby's does, but I do definitely have the deets. Oh, that's an absolutely terrible joke. Yeah, I think I'm gonna have to name the episode after an Arby's pun now. Yeah, sorry about that. But yeah, let's talk about arbitration. Let's actually explain how it works before we get too off topic making fast food jokes. So the basis of arbitration is that it's the process of a team and a player who isn't a free agent sitting down before the season to determine how much that player is worth and then how much they should be paid. This can be a bit of a rocky road, especially with, you know, high ticket, high value players who have decided that they're, you know, kind of like the second coming and that they're worth, you know, Shohei Ohtani kind of money. And I'm looking at you, Juan Soto. And if the club and the player don't agree, then it goes to be arbitrated. And that is the process wherein a league representative will pick between either the player's number, salary of what they think they're worth, or the club's number, salary of what they think the player is worth. And there's a few interesting things about that process. The first thing is that it's not just like the league representative comes in, you know, picks a number that's squarely in the middle of what the two people are suggesting. They will only ever pick one number or the other, the player's number or the club number. There's no room for compromise. There's no middle ground. And the other interesting thing is that Statcast numbers are prohibited from being used in those negotiations and discussions, which, you know, it's really interesting. So it was put quite interestingly by the guys over at Backflips and Nerds, which is a great British baseball podcast. So you guys should definitely go support them as well as tuning in, of course, to the T-Backs podcast. And they put it as it can be rewarding for a player to be more of an old school type of player rather than just, you know, one of these guys who may not hold a huge amount of value, may not have a huge amount of pop, but, you know, if you're the likes of, you know, Hyesung Kim, for example, who's just signed with the Dodgers, and, you know, the less said about that the better, because I'm so sick of the Dodgers signing every interesting prospect in baseball. Roki Sasaki, beware. Then, you know, your one tool is your contact thing, and that's not necessarily something that can always be measured just on optics and, you know, reputation alone. This is a thing that can vary wildly, and without the help of certain numbers, certain, I would say, moneyball kind of statistics, but, you know, baseball's a numbers game these days anyway. Without the help of some of those types of statistics measurements, players are gonna find themselves actually maybe not being worth as much as they think they are if they go into the arbitration process. And, you know, that can go two ways. Or, you know, sometimes a player can go in and know a good idea of what they're worth, and then you have a baseball organization with a massive cheapskate owner who won't give them that kind of money. So it really can work two ways. But teams usually would like to avoid arbitration if at all possible, and not just because it potentially will save them money if, you know, a player has an overinflated ego and has a much, much bigger opinion of themselves than the club does, but also because of the kind of bad blood it can create potentially between your franchise and your owner and your front office and a key player. And, you know, if there's bad blood between a player, there's sooner or later going to be bad press that comes with it. So, you know, it's a generally accepted rule of thumb that most GMs, most front office people would like to avoid arbitration if at all possible. And that is, of course, what the Diamondbacks have done. They've renewed contracts and agreed deals with 9 kind of key players who are pretty much guaranteed to be on that opening day 40-man roster. And we know the Diamondbacks is a hooked-up ball club. We know that there aren't any huge glaring issues in that clubhouse very often at all. So it's good to see. And now we're just going to go ahead and take a quick look and break down some of these deals, what they mean, and, you know, how that might affect the Diamondbacks moving into the future. The key note from the reports coming out of Jack Sommers, who's been kind enough to collect all things on our charts, the prevailing trend with the Diamondbacks is they've settled far below, and in some cases well below, estimates of what a lot of people were predicting certain players would be worth. And they've saved themselves a little bit of cash that you could see reinvested in some particular assets. I don't think this is the kind of money that they've saved that will go towards, you know, a massive big name signing. It's only predicted that between the predicted values of these 9 players and than what they've actually going to be making. It's estimated the Diamondbacks have saved about $2.5 million, which isn't huge in the grand scheme of things, but the fact that 8 out of those 9 players have agreed to money less than what, you know, the press would have said they were worth is quite interesting, and it shows what kind of a positive culture the Diamondbacks have going on behind the scenes. So let's just have a run through of some of these numbers. So here's the player and then the amount of money that they've agreed to make in the upcoming season, starting with the most value going to the cheapest. So at the top of it is Zach Gallen, who will be making $13.5 million. Josh Naylor, who will be making $10.9 million. Ryan Thompson with 2.9. AJ Puck with 2.9. Geraldo Perdomo with $2.5 million. Kevin Ginkle just below that at $2.4 million. Joe Manaply at $1.7 million. Pavin Smith at $1.5 million. And then Kyle Nelson at $0.8 million. So that's just above the league minimum for a professional baseball player, if you're not aware, which is around the $765,000 a year mark. So, you know, Kyle Nelson's essentially making just above the league minimum there. So, you know, that potentially you could see that as the budget option, but if the player is happy to take that kind of money, they know they're worth and they agree with what that is with the club, then I don't see any problem with that. Overall, this is, I think, some pretty sensible and shrewd maneuvering by the D-backs. So the only outlier here is, I mentioned there was one player who's actually making more than what people would predict they are worth. So I revealed to you now that is Joe Manaply, who is making about $300,000 a year more than what a lot of people would have predicted they're worth, which, you know, it's all right if you can get it, right? I guess, you know, that 2022 All-Star game still got to be pretty prominent on their CV. That was my first All-Star game, if you want a little bit of, you know, T-Bex podcast show trivia, that, you know, my first All-Star game was that 2022 game that they held in LA with, you know, the black and gold uniforms. I still have the hat from that game. And yeah, Joe Manaply was the only Diamondback on show there. And this was just after I had started getting into watching Diamondbacks baseball, and even I didn't really know who he was when they announced, and from the Arizona Diamondbacks, relief pitcher Joe Manaply. And, you know, he did fine in that game. It was, you know, a perfectly good showcase of who he was as a pitcher. But, like, I was like, come on, you look at the kind of names that they had on that roster at the time. Like, you had having a really cool season from Ketel Marte. Evan Longoria was in the building. You know, it's kind of weird that we just only had one relief pitch, but it wasn't exactly a great year for the Diamondbacks, so I guess I can forgive the selection there. Moving on. Pavin Smith settling at $1.5 million. I think that's clearly just, you know, them making sure that they get to at least one more shot at hitting off of Justin Verlander and potentially beating him up. Justin Verlander, of course, will be landing with the Giants in 2025. We're calling it the Orange Collection. He's playing for every team with an orange uniform as he arrives at the Giants after, of course, being formerly in Detroit and then famously in Houston, where Pavin Smith hit that three-homer game off of Justin Verlander. So I think, you know, Pavin will take whatever he can get to, you know, get to do that again. Of course, Pavin is a player who is out of minor league options this year, so you'll definitely be seeing him in one capacity or another on the Diamondbacks open day roster. And, you know, personal bias aside, because, you know, if you're a fan of the show and if you tuned in to see me on the D-backs dispatch last week, you'll know that I'm not exactly a massive fan of Pavin Smith, but he's a guy who I've talked about. It's like, you know, he was going to be our starting first baseman for the year before we brought in Josh Naylor, and I was like, oh my gosh, no, I really don't want to see a Diamondbacks roster where that is the case. So yeah, fortunately I think we've probably avoided that. And potentially, you know, I'd like to see Pavin potentially used as, you know, a bit of a sweetener in a trade deal, because he's a guy who has a bit of pop off his bat. He's a solid outfielder when required. I think he'd do well somewhere or other. I just don't really think there's too much excellence left in Arizona for him. And moving on, before I get into just, a 20-minute rant about how much I'd like to see Pavin Smith moved on, let's talk about one of my favorite players on the Diamondbacks. We're talking Haroldo Perdomo, who probably will be your starting shortstop on opening day. And after he accepted his deal for significantly less in his first trip through arbitration than people were predicting he would probably be eligible to make, a lot of people are saying, that's a very team-friendly deal, especially coming from a guy who's, Torrey Lovello always talks about as being kind of the link in the chain of that infield. He's the guy who kind of glues a lot of things together, holds together the team. He's somebody who's got a huge impact in terms of the way that he talks to other guys, especially the younger guys from South America on the roster. People talk about, the impact he has on Justin Martinez and getting him sort of G'd up and ready to go. And people are saying, maybe he should be named the captain for the Diamondbacks going into this upcoming season. And that's certainly something that I'm not against. I think it's been a hot minute since the Diamondbacks last named a captain. I'm sure there are listeners, wherever you're listening, that are screaming at your phone or your laptop or whatever, saying, no, you got to remember the last time the Diamondbacks named a captain. It is. I am not remembering that right now. So that's the nature of the podcast game, I'm afraid, of like, you can't remember a bazillion things when you really need them. So feel free to tweet me or reach out to the show on Instagram or put it in the comments down below if you're listening over on YouTube. Go tell me who the last Diamondbacks captain was named, if we even had one, and who it was, because I cannot remember for the life of me. And that, it'd be interesting to see, what people remember in terms of your prevailing Diamondbacks captain memories. But then, of course, you're not here to always just talk about Haroldo Perdomo as much as, having a Perdomo-themed podcast would be amazing. I'll probably add that to the list of things I want to do in the podcast in 2025. You're here to talk about the big names, so that is exactly what we're going to do. Of course, the two biggest names on this pre-arbitration list of people who have now agreed a deal was Zach Gallen and Josh Naylor. Zach Gallen, all about. He's the ace of the Diamondbacks, potentially now the number two in this rotation with the arrival of Corbin Burnes. But he's been the Diamondbacks' ace as long as I've been a Diamondbacks fan, and one of the nicest guys I've ever met. I was lucky enough to I think meet him at a Fry's as part of a promotional campaign for his role as the milkman in Arizona, and happy to support a charitable cause in making sure that kids around Arizona get fresh, clean, and healthy milk to drink as well. So yeah, shout out to Zach Gallen, awesome guy. He was one of the two bigger names. He's the guy who's made the most money out of this pre-arbitration process for the Diamondbacks. And then, of course, Josh Naylor, who, if you've been living under a rock somewhere out in the desert, or if you're Snoopy's cousin Spike, who lives in the desert and all you have is a cacti for a friend, that's our first baseman for the upcoming season, who arrived from the Cleveland Guardians in a trade which saw Slade Cioni and a draft compensation pick go the other way. And I think overall we're probably the winners of that trade. I wish Slade all the best. I'm sure he'll develop very well either as a starter or a long reliever over there in Cleveland. But I think getting Josh Naylor, even for just the 1 year that we currently have him for, was a good move. So they're the two biggest earners, earning just over $13 million and then just under $11 million respectively. We've got them both for under what people were predicting they would be making from the Diamondbacks, and of course that has to be considered a win. But what does the deals agreed actually mean in terms of a longer term outlook for the Diamondbacks? So this of course now means that they, in a year's time, when they both hit free agency, they will be A, eligible for a qualifying offer, and then B, if they turn down that qualifying offer and they end up, not re-signing with the Diamondbacks and playing elsewhere, that means that the Diamondbacks would net compensation draft picks, which, can be used a number of ways. Of course, we gave one of these draft picks to Cleveland as part of the Josh Naylor trade. But of course, if the Diamondbacks hang on to them and use their draft picks, I'm sure that undoubtedly they would be used to pick up yet another, under 6 foot speedy outfielder, because that seems to be all we ever draft these days. And as much as I'm looking forward to seeing, you know, what somebody like Slade Colwell's going to be able to do for the Diamondbacks, Jorge Barroza is going to be somebody who we might see a bit more of this year if we don't pick up any more kind of backup outfielders. We saw some of Jorge Barroza in a Diamondbacks uniform, mostly in the center field last year, and I don't think he looked too bad. So, you know, yay, more speedy outfielders. You know, if we're going to be, you know, that same Diamondbacks team that excelled at playing unique, fast-paced, small ball, not necessarily always hitting for power, just being quick, stealing bases, causing chaos. You know, if that's our team philosophy going forward in the long run, in the next, you know, 3, 4, 5 years, I think, you know, as many speedy outfielders that we can get, and some who could potentially even be in the infield if, you know, you're going to see the turnover to, you know, the likes of Jordan Lawler, Blaze Alexander, at second and at short, and potentially in some cases even at third, if you have, you know, competition there between somebody like Gino Gruver, who's a much regarded, highly regarded prospect in the organization, who you saw on MLB Network the other day, spoke very highly of his place within the Diamondbacks roster, but, you know, was a well-spoken young man as well. So, you know, maybe somebody like Gino Gruber could be a surprise appearance on the roster, as opposed to, you know, the younger guys who were expecting to certainly be involved one way or another, like Yelber Diaz, who was, you know, many predicted, including the guys over on the PHNX Diamondbacks, that if, you know, we did trade for Josh Naylor to get and send a starting pitcher the other way, it would be Yelber Diaz who went. And I think that would be a blow to the Diamondbacks organization. I think he's got a longer term future here for sure, especially when, you know, if we can, you know, offload Jordan Montgomery. There's rumors that, you know, both the A's and the White Sox might be looking for a starting pitcher like Jordan Montgomery in that kind of mold. If we can offload him, and then of course I think you're not going to see Eduardo Rodriguez in a Diamondbacks jersey for too many more years. Yelber Diaz certainly has a place to play in that young rotation with the surplus of high caliber young starting pitchers that the Diamondbacks have, with Brandon Fart, Ryan Nelson, Yelber Diaz, and then of course my personal favorite, who's, unfortunately, you're not going to see in that much in early game spring training this year, or invites to the major league camp, is Yumin Lin, who will be fulfilling a reduced military obligation in Taiwan. Of course, after winning in the international baseball tournament, he will now no longer have to serve such a large piece of military service in his native country of Taiwan. But he'll still potentially play a part in the Diamondbacks season. Of course, many people are expecting him to begin the season where he finished last year in AAA in Reno. I think that'll be a good test for him. See how he does. He's a guy who obviously doesn't have crazy velocity, but does have crazy different choices of pitching. So he's a guy who, you know, we might see a little bit more of going into, you know, the middle stretch of the year, and hopefully we won't have another injury crisis. But he's a guy who I see as perfectly capable of filling a hole if that were to come up. Overall, I think the summary has been a pretty good week if you're a Snakes fan wherever you are in the world. Now we just have to see if, yes, we can indeed dump Jordan Montgomery to somewhere. I think interesting, any franchise in baseball in a more than slightly used, not mint condition Jordan Montgomery is a big ask for anybody, especially after potentially the most likely trade that some people talked about, that trade that we would get Cody Bellinger from the Cubs in exchange for Jordan Montgomery and cash. I'm disappointed that didn't go through. I think that would have been one of the things that would have enabled another kind of blockbuster trade that people are talking about, where the Diamondbacks are potentially looking to trade one of our two great center field guys, Alec Thomas or Jake McCarthy, to try and get some value for those guys. I love both of those guys, but in this Diamondbacks outfield that has, you know, Lourdes Gurriel in left, Corbin Carroll in right, you're only allowed one center fielder. And I think it's unfair to both guys if they're waiting for their shot between Jake McCarthy and Alec Thomas. I think they could go somewhere and be, you know, a main player in whichever franchise they end up in. So as much as I'd love to be greedy and see the Diamondbacks keep both of them, I think we might have to brace ourselves for one of them departing in this offseason. But, you know, we got to get some value back for them, because these are both serious talents. they haven't left so far, so I'm still in a good mood. It's been a good week for the Diamondbacks. A frosty week here in the UK, but things are heating up in the Hot Stove League over in Arizona. Pitchers and catchers report is just around the corner, where we'll get our first look at just what this Diamondbacks rotation is going to look like. Catchers report, of course, is going to see the report and the return of hopefully a fully fit Gabby Moreno, who I think is, as of this morning, being ranked as the number 7 catcher in the MLB ahead of the upcoming season. You know, we love to see Gabby play, and clearly the experts agree. So seeing him return behind the plate, as good as Adrian Del Castillo was, potentially as a power bat, that's obviously not as good a defensive catcher as Gabby is. Primarily, your catcher has to catch and then prevent stolen bases, especially in a division as competitive as the NL West is going to be, I think, next year. It's going to be so good to have Gabby back behind the plate. And who knows, maybe the Del Castillo DH rumors have been shut down already. That we've already said in the news cycle so far in this Hot Stove season that no, we're not going to see Adrian Del Castillo as the DH. But, you know, maybe that's a sneaky bit of misdirection. I certainly think, you know, there are worse DHs you could have in your lineup. And so far, if we don't have, you know, the backup second baseman, if Jordan Montgomery's not going to play there, to see Ketel Marte shift over to that DH spot. Right now we're still looking, and of course with Jock Peterson signing elsewhere, the Randall Grichuk return looking unlikely, we do need that DH. So we'll stay tuned on that one. Remains to be seen. But you know, it's been a good week so far. So thank you very much for listening. I'm gonna wrap it up there. Thank you very much for listening to the T-Backs Podcast, Arizona's number one baseball and beverage podcast. We've got to say shout out to our supportive partners, both at Moonshot Social London and at the Home Run Travel Company. Thank you both for supporting the Diamondbacks and the T-Backs Podcast as we progress into 2025. Please remember to follow, like, subscribe, wherever it is that you're listening to the show, and also go follow both myself at GB Diamondback over on X, formerly Twitter, and the at T-Bex Podcast on Instagram, X, formerly Twitter, YouTube, and Blue Sky. Thank you very much, and we'll see you on the next one.